Totally Football Show. Today, yes, Club 7, as Kevin takes Man City to heaven. And all hail the Palace 11, who get their first win since the days of Nye Bevan. While Roy Hodgson's working wonders again, elsewhere there's a successful return for De Boer as Mourinho shuts down Saturday's big game at Anfield. We round it all up and look ahead to an exceptional midweek of matches. Bayern, Celtic, Real Madrid, Spurs, Man City, Napoli and more. All of that plus your questions. It's the Totally Football Show. Hi everybody, and on board Totally Football Show today, very special cast featuring David Priest. David Priest. Yeah, David Priest in the house.
Morning, James.
Yeah, morning to you. So glad you could join us. Rafa Honigstein's here, aren't you, Rafa?
I am, James.
Boom,
yes.
Finally we agree on something. Hooray! And hello, Kelly Cates.
Hello, how are you?
It's been a while. I'm well, thanks. It's been a while since
nobody ever asks you, do they? Nobody ever asks how you feel, James.
Do you know, that's... Yeah, but it's not about me, Kelly. In this case, it's about you. We haven't seen you for ages.
It is a while. Too long.
You're a busy lady.
I'm a very busy lady, yeah. Yes.
You had a busy weekend in Liverpool.
I went up to Anfield on Friday for the renaming of the Centenary Stand.
Is it a bit of a chagrin that they couldn't find something new to name up? They had to give him something.
They could have done the new stand.
Yeah, like an old stand that they had anyway.
Just like, well, it's hanging around. We might as well just do something. It's a weird occasion because it's really lovely to see everybody. Lots of old faces there. But it's a bit like a wake without a dead body.
Oh.
It's kind of everybody sits around and says nice things about people, which is what normally happens when they're dead.
Mm.
But, you know, it's nice that he's around to hear it all.
Yeah.
But it's very odd to have somebody speaking at their own wake. That was unsettling.
Yeah. There are people who do that.
Have I taken a dark turn here?
No, not really. Because I think that's something nice to have a celebration, you know, while the person's still around.
Yeah.
And the
grandkids were there, which was kind of what he wanted. He spent the whole week sort of talking to everybody saying, are you coming up? But he didn't really want any of his kids there. He wanted the grandchildren there. So that was kind of the important things were done.
Oh, that was nice, but it was a nice day for him.
I'm sure, yeah. A lovely time was had by all.
Oh, okay,
no, it was lovely.
Good.
It was lovely.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk about Liverpool Man United later on. Where would you like to start today, David? Is it Man City Stoke?
We can do that. Or
yeah,
we can go on then.
Let's.
Yeah.
City really missing Sergio Aguero and Mendy. I can't remember past last Tuesday, but for me, this is far and away the best Premier League performance I've ever seen.
Ever?
Ever.
They were
playing,
Bearing
in mind, I didn't start watching
Stoke.
It until about...
I mean, Stoke are utterly useless.
Are they? They held Man United to that 2-2 draw. They beat Arsenal.
No, I don't like Stoke. It's certainly, I think, the most impressive Premier League performance of the season.
Okay.
And underlines why Manchester City were favourites for most people to win a title rather than United.
So which Premier League team of yore from the past would beat this Man City side?
I think Chelsea a couple of seasons ago would have a decent chance of beating them.
Yeah.
Or was it last season they won?
Well, last season they did pretty well.
Only last season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they beat them last season, didn't they?
They were just awesome to watch, though. The confidence.
There's been very few teams who have been as enjoyable to watch as City.
Right.
You go back, like, even, I don't know, you know, people say about Kevin Keegan's entertainers, but it's that sort of level of just, even now, I can go watch any game I want. I want to go and see Man City. They're a massive draw now, and it doesn't matter who they're playing. You just want to see them play. You want to see them pass the ball to each other.
Yeah.
It's strange, though, that they don't sell out more. And they don't sell more tickets than they do, given how brilliant they are and given that they have a really local, strong fan base and given that they had huge crowds when they dropped down the division. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but given how brilliant they are, is it surprising that they don't sell out more often, that there aren't more neutrals, like you say, picking up these tickets?
Should Pochettino start calling them the De Bruyne team?
No,
would that be fair?
No, I mean, he is their best player, but that doesn't mean they're a one-player team, is it? I mean, they're just amazing to watch. And they're just so much fun. The sixth goal is the one I love, when De Bruyne gets it on the right, and it, like, his leg is sort of telescopic to get the ball in the first place. It's like it stretches like Inspector Gadget.
Inspector Gadget.
It's just amazing. They're just amazing. And
other
fun
goals you may have enjoyed were the second one, finished by Sterling after 35 touches, 15 passes and 10 players. Or Fernandinho's rather special in-off-the-bar effort, which I think was number five.
Yeah, do you know what I loved about that though? It was the fact that Jack Butland, you got a tiny touch on it to hit the bar, and you can see sort of like as he hears the ball hit the bar, you can see that little bit of hope in him as he turns around thinking it's I've saved it, it's gone off the bar, it's went away, and then just the dejection in him as you see it all the hope seeping out of him visibly. Mm.
That must have been about the toughest game any goalkeeper's faced in a long while. Just because the amount, the speed with which they move, the ease with which they could get bodies into the box and then move the ball side to side.
Yeah, but also it's an easy one just to push under the carpet when you're a goalkeeper, simply because there was nothing really he could do about it. Any goal you looked at and try and analyse it and think, oh, maybe I could have done this better, there was nothing. Mm. I tell you, he was really good, and he's probably hasn't getting any recognition, is Raheem Sterling. David Silva's goal, I thought, there's no way if I'm in Raheem Sterling's position that I'm going to pass the ball there. And the fact that he's reversed the pass when he's about 3 or 4 yards out, it's just brilliant awareness as well.
But this is another reason why perhaps the goalkeeper just throws his hands up and says that there's no point here playing, because City don't take shots, Fernandinho accepted, from hard angles. They will play and play and play until it's a tap-in. What blew my mind about this match, having only seen the highlights, is that De Bruyne only played 66 minutes.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that, which is frightening, really. He only played two-thirds of the game.
You're right to say that about goalkeepers, though. They practically take the goalkeeper out of the game because they manoeuvre the ball to get sort of in between the penalty box and the six-yard box on the byline. There's very little a goalkeeper can do in that situation.
Very little, as you say.
It's almost as if Guardiola's a really good coach.
Do you know what? In terms of Guardiola, I think the point about Raheem Sterling's a great one, because you look, everybody says, well, if you can go out and spend £400 million, of course you're going to win the league. But actually, you see the improvement in a player like Raheem Sterling, and then you realise that he's been brilliantly coached. Yes, it helps that you can go out and spend a fortune, and they did spend a fortune on Sterling as well. But if you can then improve those players, it takes a real level of skill to make those tiny tweaks right at the top. You know, it's not about just taking players and giving them a set of instructions and expecting them to stick to the letter. To tweak players at that level is a real skill, and that's clearly what Guardiola has.
It's a real slight on English football, though, because Raheem Sterling was rubbish last week. That's what everyone's opinion was after the game. Raheem Sterling's rubbish. You know, he didn't play well at all for England. But it just shows you the difference. It's a slight on English football and
really on the England team?
Yeah, and really on Gareth Southgate as well.
I'm kind of contractually obliged to mention that it was about this point last season that the wheels came off after a similarly impressive start, but not much prospect of that happening right now.
No, there's not, and there's not many chinks in the armour, but I think one weakness now, if anybody's going to take advantage of it, is going to be Fabian Delph. See, the first goal that came from Diouf on Saturday, when the ball was played to the team on the right-hand side, Delph sort of, he's trying to read the ball. Now, in the midfield area, that's what he's going to do. He's going to try and nip in front of people. He doesn't have to worry what's behind him because he's got some insurance behind him. In this case, he's trying to nip in front. He's misjudged it. Juve took the ball past him and down the right-hand side, and then obviously cut inside and scored. But that's going to be one area that's going to be of some concern if there are going to be any chinks in their armour.
Right. They do, of course, have Danilo able to take over that position. Possibly slightly less exciting going forward, but still not a bad replacement to have.
There's still also the option to be really quite deep and then try to hit them on the counter attack. It's easier said than done, because City this year works so well in cutting out that first ball. The pressing starts immediately, and you don't have the time to aim properly. You don't have the time as a forward to get into position. So they've controlled the counter attack really well. But just in terms of logic and spaces to attack and the space that they leave, that might be a way forward. And I think Stoke were the classic example of how you can't play against City, which is kind of a mishmash. Just sort of, we press a little bit and we defend a little bit, but we're not really deep and we're not really aggressive up front. And they were just picked off. There was some great analysis yesterday on Match of the Day too, on some of the City movement, and it was just simple stuff. But Stoke were completely thrown by one guy moving to the right and the other guy moving to the left. They're like, what's going on?
It's like what you're saying about De Bruyne. He isn't half the player if he doesn't have those options around him.
Of course.
I mean, you look at even on the right-hand side, and Martin Keown was right yesterday on Match of the Day 2, saying that pass to Sane wasn't on. In 99.9% of footballers, that nobody's even thinking about making that pass.
Napoli are Man City's next opponents. I'm not sure if they're going to play the way that you were suggesting there, Rafa.
Napoli, no, they can't really, can they?
Mm.
Should be an amazing game. Not to
they
watch.
Are the only side in Europe's top five leagues, still with a 100% league record. This weekend they went to Roma and won 1-0. Roma did hit the bar a couple of times. There is a suggestion, though. I mean, Napoli are a fantastic side to watch, and we were talking about this last week, the way that these two managers are so interesting, the way they set their teams up, the way the one-touch football that they play. Whether Napoli may have their sights focused more on the game next weekend against Inter, who are right behind them in the table in Serie A, which certainly seemed to be the case in their first Champions League match this year when they almost threw the match, or not threw, but they certainly went in with an understrength team against Shakhtar and ended up losing.
But they won't do that against City, surely. They won't rest players.
Well, Sarri... we were amazed when they did it ahead of a clash with bottom of the table Benevento in the first game. But it should be a terrific game, and especially because, as you say, Rafa, it doesn't look like Napoli can do anything except come on to City.
You said they won't do that, but should they, though? Do they stand a better chance playing the way that they always play?
I don't think they have the personnel to soak
up pressure. The
pressure. They're kind of a little bit comedy still at the back. Anyway, Napoli beat Roma 1-0. And just so happens, David, that Roma this midweek are going to be at Chelsea, who are coming off the shock of the season. I put it to you, the biggest shock ever, probably, in the Premier League ever.
In Premier League history.
History.
The biggest upset in Premier League history.
It kind of is, Kelly. I mean, you know, make
a
case for another
out.
Match. Palace hadn't scored a goal, hadn't got a point all season. Champions go there.
But Chelsea were poor. And I just don't think they can't be that poor again. You look at even at Gary Cahill's reaction after the game. And
what
he just
do?
Had his head. Well, he had his head when he was being interviewed. And he said that we know that. We know right from the beginning that we made mistakes early on. We just weren't at it. We weren't there. They don't look like a side that got things wrong because something deeper is wrong. They just look like they had a really bad day and
they lacked cojones.
They'll come back. I don't think there was a. They were just off, weren't they? It was just one of those games.
Also,
no? Or do you think there's something? Raf's frowning at me, so I think
no, I'm not frowning. I'm just wondering because Conte obviously thinks it is something deeper. He thinks, he's making these noises saying that I don't have enough players. And I think that is a problematic course to take for a number of reasons, because first of all, I don't think it's going to go down well with the hierarchy. It might be the case that he's off anyway and it doesn't really matter what Abramovich and Marina think of him. But it's not a great way to deal with it because you kind of give your players almost excuses.
But didn't Cahill say that? I think Cahill mentioned that well. But I've got no sympathy with them whatsoever. The fact that they've, the money they've spent in the past as well, but also the pool of talent that they've had at their disposal, that are out on loan at different various clubs now, the fact that they complain about, our squad's not big enough, it's ridiculous.
Crystal Palace, though, eh? Crystal Palace. Yeah, right. Conte and his Chelsea bullied almost by a much fitter-looking, much more interested-looking Palace.
Yeah, they were better. Mm. They had chances. It wasn't... As Roy Hodgson said, it wasn't a scrappy win. They didn't just, fluke it. They had other chances. They could have won by more potentially. They look like Roy Hodgson's made the difference that we thought that he would in the best case scenario, which is that they look like they know what they're doing.
Is it because he's had a fortnight to prepare with them while Chelsea's players were flying around? And they've got Zaha back. Is that what it is, Kelly?
Yeah, Louis Zaha, as he was captioned on Sky Sports News.
Was he?
Yeah.
It was an easy mistake to make,
fun.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Zaha, whatever.
I think there is something to be said about this Chelsea squad looking a little bit thin, a little bit predictable.
Mm-hmm.
I think towards the end of last season, that already teams were beginning to work out what the best way to play against them. And this amazing power that Moses and Marcos Alonso created on the wings, it was going to be very hard to repeat once you have European football on top of your schedule because... wing-back is an incredibly difficult position to play if you want to attack. If you just want to defend and be a back five, then that's great. But if you actually want to go forward and you're effectively the creative outlet for many times, it's hard. And, there's no Morata in the side at the moment.
No Moses either for most of this game.
Exactly. And it just doesn't look... you look player by player and it doesn't really a side that screams goals or screams... excitement or anything. I mean, they were so competent and they were so machine-like last season, but I don't know if they kind of just missed a trick in really upgrading the side properly.
Or they came up against a Palace side that, against all expectations, had been completely motivated by a manager who we perhaps owe an apology to, Mr. Roy Hodgson, who didn't cover himself in glory with his England exit, but certainly seems to have had a big impact on these Eagles. I liked his comments afterwards. They asked, how are you going to celebrate this phenomenal win? He says, I don't drink an awful lot these days. Red wine isn't the best thing to drink if you want to keep your calories low, but I'll enjoy a glass tonight because I enjoyed watching my players play well.
I love the idea of Roy with a little calorie counter app.
Yeah.
Just sitting there next to Mrs. Hodgson. How many of these can I, have you got your glasses, love? How many of these can I have? Quite like
it's
that idea.
Sweet,
that's
isn't it?
The idea of cosy domesticity.
He gave Mrs. Hodgson a bit of a treat yesterday as well, didn't he?
Christ almighty, you've got inside information.
Where did he take her to?
Took her
a special place. Oh, Southampton, right, yeah, that worked. Really, to see the game against Newcastle.
Yeah. Like you said, he knows how to treat a woman, doesn't he?
Right.
She would have enjoyed the second half at least.
What a game it was, yeah.
Hmm. I didn't see that one, but I'm looking forward to hearing all about it a bit later on. Palace are still bottom. They're 1 point behind Bournemouth, 4 points off safety. They have Newcastle away and then West Ham at home as their next two games. Chelsea are now 9 points behind Manchester City. And they've got Roma on Wednesday, a Roma side that, as I mentioned, was beaten on Saturday 1-0 by Napoli. A chance for Conte finally to see Nainggolan play at Stamford Bridge. So that's nice. Ambition of
You're
his.
You're really rubbing it in, aren't you?
So, I'm not sure about Roma in this. They might start brightly. I think Chelsea are going to get the win here. And it pains me to say it because Roma can be a very exciting team. But when anything goes wrong, they fall apart a bit. Chelsea apparently could have Morata back much earlier than expected for that.
They need him.
They need him. All right. That'll be coming up on Wednesday. Right now, we're going to take a little break. Then possibly game of the midweek.
Listeners, producer Ben here, and let me give you a glimpse into my oh-so-exciting lifestyle. You see, I like nothing more than falling asleep in front of Match of the Day. And when I do wake up in the middle of the night on the sofa with a sore back and a stiff neck, I always think to myself, if only I'd gone up to bed before those Burnley West Brom highlights and I treated myself to a great night's sleep on a Casper mattress. See, the Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's affordable because Casper sell direct to the likes of you and me, cutting out the middleman and the showroom, and it's comfortable because of a special combination of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. You can't go wrong with Casper. There's free shipping and you've got 100 nights to make up your mind. If you don't love your new mattress, Casper will pick it up and give you a full refund, no questions asked. Get £55 towards any Casper mattress by visiting casper.com and using the promo code TOTALLYFOOTBALL at the checkout. That's CASPER.com and the promo code TOTALLYFOOTBALL without any spaces. Terms and conditions apply.
Live news, everybody. We're playing the O2 on Wednesday the 29th of November. Comedy's Kevin Bridges will be joining us there as a very special guest. He's just back from a sellout tour of Australia, New Zealand and Asia. So that's nice, isn't it? He's a funny man. Funny. Rafa, you're going to be joining us, I believe, then.
Yes.
All right, well, you'll enjoy that.
Just to up the comedy ante a bit.
Well, it's just going to be a great evening. And if you'd like to snaffle up some of the few remaining tickets, the o2.co.uk/events. Similar story with the Birmingham show that we're doing on Wednesday the 8th of November, down to kind of very scatterings, a few handfuls of tickets. Kelly, do you like Kevin Bridges?
I love Kevin Bridges.
Do you? Genuinely?
Yeah, I genuinely absolutely love Kevin Bridges. Yeah.
All right.
I think he's brilliant.
Great.
I know, but would you like me to offer more? I'm not very good at comedic analysis, but yeah.
No, I mean, that's
either
for
of
me.
Comedy or in a comedic way.
Hmm.
You would like, well, Kevin Bridges is very, very, very funny.
And you can see him live.
And you can see him live. That's very exciting.
With us at the.
He's live. He knows his football as well.
Yeah, he does. He's a big Barcelona fan, isn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was Celtic fan.
Yeah, but he's a massive. For some reason.
Right. Champions League game of the midweek. There's so many to choose from. Now, we have talked up Man City-Napoli, but I'm ever so excited about Real Madrid's clash with Spurs on Tuesday at the Bernabeu. Two of the competition's deadliest strikers. Cristiano Ronaldo and Harry Kane, that's who I'm talking about there.
Mm.
Maybe, yeah, what do you think? Harry Kane's got 5 goals after 2 match days. What?
I want to see Spurs on Saturday against Bournemouth.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Do you know what? It was interesting to watch it. I mean, it was quite boring first half, but from a tactical perspective, it was quite interesting, actually, because everyone thought before the game that Bournemouth would, they couldn't play this defensive football that was required at Wembley. Right. The likes of Swansea and Burnley have come away with points from.
And they lost.
Yeah, but they did lose, but I thought they did really well. And then, and it seems it's Eddie Howe. He's changed his philosophy a little bit, and it's kind of the case of where the operation went well, but the patient died anyway.
Right. But you're going glass half full on that. Yeah,
I am. Yeah, because you can see that he's trying to change things now. Yep. I mean, afterwards in the
another patient soon might live.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The more he does it, the better he gets at it.
All right.
But it's just with Bournemouth.
Yeah.
He said after the game that they play this attacking football, they're used to having more chances.
Mm.
But the fact that they changed this time to sort of to swamp the midfield, it almost worked. Because, I mean, Begovic until later on didn't have a lot to do. They defended quite well.
All right, excellent. Here's something I forgot to ask you, Rafa, on behalf of Thomas Burkan, who says, is Thomas Tuchel going to replace Antonio Conte at Chelsea soon?
I don't know about soon, but if reports are right, and if the kind of the noises and the rumours around Stamford Bridge are right, that Conte will go at the end of this year, then of course there is a demand for somebody coming in. I think Tuchel is somebody that Chelsea have thought about before. There was some loose contact in June when there was a danger that Conte might actually pack it in and leave before the start of the season. It didn't really get to any real kind of negotiation or anything like that. So when there will be a shortlist for next year, I think he'll probably feature.
Okay. But, nothing more specific than that?
No, because I don't think Chelsea have already made real preparations for Conte's succession, but they are beginning to think of who would be a person to interview, and I'm sure they will talk to him then. Why wouldn't they?
Why indeed? Anyway, sorry, back to...
Maybe Carlo as well.
Carlo Ancelotti?
No, I don't think so.
Stranger things have happened, Rafa.
Yeah, it's true.
Back to this Real Madrid against Spurs thing, because while Spurs were enjoying a narrow 1-0 win because of Christian Eriksen at Wembley, their first league win at Wembley, actually, Real Madrid were beating Getafe 2-1. You know, and Ronaldo got a goal. That was his first league goal of the season, actually.
Yes.
In that win. How big a test is this? Just throwing this out there. How big a test is this for Pochettino, one of the emerging names in world football management? How big a test is this?
I mean, the whole group stage for him is a big test with Dortmund and Real Madrid. And already they beat Dortmund at Wembley, which was a huge bonus and a great way to start the campaign, especially after a really disappointing outing last year, where, you know, everything you have to say in Pochettino's favour, who pound by pound is by far the best manager in the Premier League for what he's working with and what he gets out of them. There was a kind of a caveat over his head with the Champions League. I think this year they're showing that they've grown and they can even get out of a group stage, which is really, really tricky with Dortmund and Real Madrid. So anything they can pick up from there would be a huge bonus. They might not have to get any points from those two games against Real Madrid to still qualify because of their great start. So it's not a kind of a must win. But I think, especially the coaches, like the international coaches, they always see themselves in relation to other Champions League coaches and want to show on the stage that they can mix it up with the big boys. And I'd be really interested to see how Spurs approach this game, because I think it's going to be very, very hard, as Dortmund have found, to try and press this Real Madrid midfield, because they're so unbelievably good in keeping the ball. They're just pressing resistant. You put two men on them and they still just wriggle out. Just a turn of the shoulder and Modric goes or Kroos goes. And that is so demoralising for any team that tries to push. And then the gaps are opening up. So whether they can do, you know, play kind of an underdog game and go really deep and then try and hit them long, like they did very successfully against Dortmund. Maybe it wasn't even a plan. Maybe it was something that Dortmund forced them to do, but it worked so well in that first half against Dortmund at Wembley. That'd be really interesting to see if they'll adopt a similar style.
That's Tuesday, then. A match you can see as part of the all-encompassing goals show, Rafa, which
indeed,
you'll be
James,
lending your expertise to
So can I say something about the about you saying about Pochettino there, saying whether he's going to change his tactics to suit the game and to play a different style? I think it's a massive thing at the minute that some managers are stubborn against their own sort of their own good, simply because they have such a belief in the way they play. Mm. I was talking about Eddie Howe changing a little bit. All right, mm-hmm. they lost 1-0, but Peter Bosz did the same thing. He stuck to his guns and paid the price for it. When clearly you could see that they'd been watching Spurs before that. Clear to see that the way to keep them at bay was to...
Well, he did the same thing this weekend against Leipzig, and they lost at home the first time in 41 games. He came out afterwards and he said the same thing that coaches like Klopp, even Guardiola say, who are so in belief of their own system that they'll always say the problem was the application. Yeah. He said even Dortmund didn't play well, he said, of his own team. So I don't think, I mean, some guys are so extreme when it comes to their system. They're so convinced that the system is right, and if there's any problems, it's not the system, it's the way that the people fail to grasp the niceties of it or just don't apply themselves well enough. And there's just no talking to them. I mean, Guardiola was exactly the same, even though he was actually far more flexible than people gave him credit for with the way he played. But whenever they lost, the first thing people were saying was, well, his system is too open, it's too naive. And he always says, no, that's not the point. The point is that we didn't control the counter-attack. We didn't cut out that first ball. If we do it properly and then there is no counter-attack, then we don't have that conversation. So you can't get into these, you can't get these guys to change. I don't know. I don't think Pochettino is as dogmatic. I think he's far more willing to negotiate his principles.
It's one thing I quite admire about Mourinho, that fact that that he has this such big ego, but he it's not big enough to think, well, I can play this way. And sometimes, I mean, he enjoys playing that way to change. He's probably been looking at that game against Liverpool and thinking, I can't wait until we can do this. He was never going to play any other way than what he did on Saturday.
No.
Anyway, speaking of that Liverpool game, hey, David, your boy De Gea, he did all right, didn't he? On the one big chance.
Yeah, and it was a good weekend for goalkeepers. Some great saves, yeah. Lloris made an unbelievable save. The ball cross came in, come off there, Eric Dier's back, and great reaction down to his left. But it was exactly the same. But a lot of keepers wouldn't have saved that, made the save that De Gea made, simply because it's not really close to him. It's obviously about a yard and a half away from him. A lot of keepers would be tempted to go with their hand and just... Economic-wise, you're not going to be able to get there with your hand. So, and he always shoots a foot out, and it goes against what you're taught as a goalkeeper. When you're a goalkeeper, you get taught to be on your sort of the balls of your feet or forward all the time.
Right.
Now, to make that sort of save, you've got to change your position, rock back on your heels, and shoot a leg out.
Has he made a conscious decision somewhere along his path as a goalkeeper to be, I'm going to be the guy who uses his feet?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's to do with futsal. I don't know whether he did play futsal a lot when he was younger, but it's very much a futsal technique. Sometimes when the shot's coming from further away and the ball's just out of reach, it can look a little bit lazy, which some people do criticise him for. But more often than not, it's a successful one.
On the subject of that game, because it was a big one at Anfield, a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, 0-0 is... As usual, I thought the first half particularly was quite entertaining. Some chances. If only they'd changed that grey shirt at half time, then who knows what could have matched we could have been in for.
I don't think it was nearly as bad as people made out.
I was
fairly entertained.
Yeah, and although there is a case for saying Mourinho, faced with a Liverpool defence with as many problems as it's had, and lacking Lallana and above all Sadio Mane, should he not have gone for it? Was this not an occasion to think, no, I can really punish them? What do you think there, Kelly?
And it's a Manchester United side that have scored 21 goals this season. I mean, I know a lot of them have come late on in the game after, 80 minutes or so. But that, I mean, maybe they...
You that's... know why that didn't happen? Fellaini out injured.
Yes, no late goals. But I just think, we know, as you said, you don't expect Mourinho to go and do anything different. But if he is going to do it, surely this would be the game in which he could take a risk. Like even the last, you know, when they say we're going up against a tired defence, Manchester United getting all these late goals this season. But I know that's what he does, and asking him to change is futile, but I don't understand it. I don't understand that thinking.
The fact he's seen the whole season, the way he's seen this match, so he's playing reactive football, basically, if he's playing table tennis, he's just knocking it back over the other side of the net, just getting it back over. He's not taking any fancy shots.
Chang.
Yeah, exactly.
Approach.
He just makes sure he gets it back over the net. And all he's waiting for, Moreno to be out of position. He's waiting for Lovren to give him a chance. He's waiting for Gomez to show a bit of experience like he did and be out of position. That's what he's waiting for. He's just waiting for that. And he's going to do this with Manchester City. Instead of looking at it and saying, oh, well, we need to keep up with them. They're on fire now. We need to make sure we get 3 points so we don't fall two. He's waiting for playing the long game, just thinking, well, we're going to stick in there and make sure that
he's
we get
a chance.
He's
being the tortoise to their hair.
There we go. Yeah.
In a certain
sense.
Can
he do that, though, this season? Can he? Because if he goes to Manchester City and does that, they'll find a way past, won't they?
Well, if he did that last season and waited for Manchester City to make mistakes, then he probably would have won the title. If they'd had Lukaku last year. No?
Yeah, possibly.
I don't know.
I think different this season.
I think that obviously you can always make the argument that the system or the idea worked to the extent that they were very solid, but when they used the ball, they used it very poorly, which was obviously not by design, I think. I mean, there have been Mourinho teams who wanted to give the ball away on purpose because they said having the ball is very dangerous. Yeah. We don't want the ball.
Our players are not good enough with football.
Yeah, but this is not the case. I mean, yeah. You had players on the pitch in Mkhitaryan, in Martial, who, you know, you would have expected to do something with the ball, but the ball almost immediately came straight back. They were very poor in possession. Matic, I thought, had a really ropey game. The point being that I don't think that Mourinho wanted his team to be so ineffectual going forward. He had an idea, and he obviously, as he later admitted, which was quite interesting, he expected Liverpool to make more mistakes and to provide more space than they did, and it didn't come off. I'm wondering, maybe I'm beginning to be just as cynical as he is, but I'm wondering how much this absolute need not to lose was mixed up with this new message that's come out today that he's not really sure about United and maybe wants to go to PSG and he's not getting the backing. And maybe, you know, he needed so desperately to get some sort of result
to peddle that line. The fact that people might be talking about the performance.
No, I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares
about the performance. I think he takes delight in going
whittling
to places and
chips.
Spoiling.
The thing is,
whittling, yeah.
Going with what we're saying about managers not changing before, because of what Klopp said afterwards, he said he would never play like that. Or when he was asked, couldn't
play at Liverpool like that, which I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it was
a
great line.
You could play away from home then.
It was a great line.
But they couldn't play at home like that in a game. They could play away from home.
I don't know. I remember some Benitez performances.
Yeah.
Anyway, Klopp gets his first clean sheet in 7 matches, although it is now, what is it, one win in 8, I think, for Liverpool. United, midweek, Liverpool have got Maribor. They're going to go to Slovenia. That's exciting. Mm. They won 2-1 at the weekend in the Slovenian League. Whereas Man United are going to be in Portugal taking on Benfica in a repeat of the 1968 final. Yeah. Nostalgia fans. Benfica, who sold off their defence in the summer, lost 5-0 against Basel in the last round of Champions League action. So you'd probably favour United, would you there? Mm. Is that one?
They might have a chance.
I don't think Liverpool
against
will win.
Against Maribor?
I don't think they'll win. I think it'll be 0-0.
No, come on. Against Maribor?
Priest has spoken.
Yeah. Why?
Because they're decent.
It's a tough place to go to.
They're decent defensively. They've got a decent goalkeeper who's getting on a bit now, Handanovic, Samir's cousin. Did you know that? Well, this is just a useless fact I'm throwing out there, but Slovenia, there's 5 of the Slovenian squad all grew up in the same block of flats.
Really?
And all went to school together.
The Slovenian national squad?
Yeah.
5 of them?
Handanovic, Ilic, Branko, Ljubljanov, am I right in that? Yeah, it's 5 of them, yeah. It's 5.
We're not going to check.
No, but it's 5 players, they all grew up in the same...
That's got to be the greatest kind of concentration of football.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
talent.
They were decent clubs as well. Kievo, Bruges, obviously Inter Handanovic. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Nice one, David, nice one. All right, well, let's just park that for a second and then come back with more. Do you know what? It's been a broad-ranging and... freewheeling chat this, and there's loads of things I should mention, but Rafa, you were talking a little bit about what happened with Borussia Dortmund this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident in saying that was indeed the best game of the Bundesliga season so far.
The Borussia Dortmund-Leipzig game?
Yeah. Why? That was spectacular. Uh-huh. I mean, it had everything. It had five goals, two sendings off, two teams who were playing ultra-aggressive pressing style. It had that big ideological kind of conflict. You know, there was a fan protest against Leipzig before the game. It was all peaceful.
From the Dortmund fans?
Yeah, from Dortmund fans. All very peaceful.
Are they still doing that?
Yeah, they are, yeah. But, of course, it added a bit of extra needle to the game. And, it was hugely entertaining and some really, really good football being played.
Excellent. Leipzig are going to be taking on... Is it Porto?
Yes, they've got Porto, yeah.
All right. But the story with that defeat for league-leading Borussia Dortmund is that Bayern Munich are back in the title picture. Now... They unveiled their new kind of dawn.
Yeah. Jupp Heynckes' new progressive return. Young manager.
Yeah. 72-year-old Jupp Heynckes, who begins with a 5-0 thrashing of Freiburg.
Yeah, I mean, it was Freiburg. And Thomas Müller said, we can't really start singing hymns just yet. Please excuse us. But it was interesting to see that, of course, he kind of turned back the clock and almost had a sort of 2013 style and team playing. Martinez was back in a holding position, something he hadn't played in years. Very strong emphasis on the wingers and the fullbacks. And they showed a reaction. I think the team felt that they had to do something to back the new manager. I think there was a huge emotional and personal connection with him, and he's already changed the atmosphere around the dressing room and, more importantly, perhaps in the boardroom.
Wow.
Where things were so fraught and so complicated that he has acted as a peacemaker, I think, and really calmed things down. And everyone loves him. Everyone gets on with him. And in Peter Hermann, his assistant coach, possibly the most expensive assistant coach in European football, because Bayern paid €2 million for Düsseldorf to get him
right
out of his contract, has in those few days actually put some sessions together that look like real practice sessions again. There is pace.
Here we go.
There is, all the players lined up afterwards.
You and your Ancelotti agenda.
No, it's not an agenda. I mean, it was remarkable to hear the players talk about very simple things, but say, finally, we have football training sessions again. Did you know, James,
yes,
that some of them met up privately to play in the park because they didn't get enough football
on
Ancelotti?
Which park did they go and play in?
I think at Englischer Garten. This is absolutely true.
Uh-huh.
They felt that the training was so lax, they didn't do enough, so they privately met to play more football.
That's remarkable. That is a remarkable story. I grant you, they got their first win in three matches anyway against Freiburg. Now, we were positing, perhaps a little bit, hopefully, that the upheaval in Bavaria might open the door for some kind of upset for Celtic, who are going to be facing Bayern next in the Champions League. Back-to-back
too late. If
matches.
They'd met Ancelotti's Bayern, then
right.
Yes, I think now it's going to be hard. I mean, this was not a perfect performance. Bayern looked a little bit vulnerable in the first half. They conceded three good chances. You could see that some of the balance wasn't quite there. And Jupp Heynckes addressed it afterwards. But there is so much more kind of urgency and a sense of common purpose on this pitch. It really was quite interesting to see. And I think at home, it'll be very hard for Celtic
how
to get
how big
anything.
An impact do you think Jupp Heynckes can have on Bayern? For example, Ram S says, if Bayern win the Champions League, would it be the greatest comeback story for a manager ever?
It probably would be, yeah.
But it's not impossible, is it? I mean, is there the talent there?
It's not impossible. I mean, the squad, I think there was a lot of stuff written about the squad in the wake of Ancelotti leaving, as if, you know, he'd become the victim of Bayern's failure to give him a decent squad. But you look at the squad, yes, you have two players who are a little bit old, but that's two players. The rest of these players are World Cup winners. They're players that can play in any big team in the world would have a decent chance of playing for them. So I don't see that. The problem was that they had no real tactical cohesion, no real sense of what it is they wanted to do. And then if you want to just play an individual football, sort of go out and express yourself, for that they weren't individually good enough. And you saw that Last year, you saw it against PSG. They don't have superstars up front who can play that kind of game and to let you off. But I think if they develop that kind of togetherness that they've seemed to have backed, they might have a decent chance.
All right. Well, they're home to Celtic. Mm. Kelly, can I ask you about Celtic?
You can ask me if you like.
But Celtic, I think question mark.
Look, it's exactly as Raf says. I mean, they've got Scott Brown back, I think, for this game. They've improved slightly in Europe this season. They got a good win away. They look better, but they're going to Bayern Munich. And they're not going to, as you said, Bayern Munich under Ancelotti. They're going to Bayern Munich as they were. So, look, same as against PSG. It's possible, but it's not likely.
Mm. All right, then. Moving on, anyway. Let's return to the sunny climes of the Premier League. And one of the more interesting games this weekend, I put it to you, Kelly, was Watford's 2-1 win over Arsenal. An Arsenal side that had gone through September unbeaten, not only unbeaten, but without conceding a single goal in the Premier League. That was until they encountered Watford and Troy Deeney and his big kahunas.
Yes. Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah. He's been widely hailed because he came out and said something, which I appreciate, you know, that player says something after match.
But it's not new. We had spoken to him on the
thing.
He said it about Arsenal. Interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying exactly the same thing. When you're playing against Arsenal, you look at them and you realise that some of those players just aren't up for it. It's also not the first person to say it about Arsenal. Birmingham players said it after they beat them in the League Cup final years ago. It's not new. It's interesting that he says it. He was very strong in the way that he said it, but he's not told us anything. Maybe it's just the fact that players don't often come out and criticise other teams. Yeah. And that's what... But he's criticised them before. Other players have criticised Arsenal for the same thing. And Arsenal fans are just sick of hearing it, aren't they?
And to be fair, Mertesacker kind of backed it up by saying they wanted it more, they were better.
But the thing is, it's not a real criticism of Arsenal. I don't think. It's more something about themselves, more about Watford, the way they approach the games. A lot of teams, I know... like playing against sort of great Celtic sides in the past, you go into the games with a certain sort of, we're thinking that it's going to be a difficult game that you're going to defend. But it's about yourself. It changes the whole dynamic of the game. If you just go out there and you take the game to the opposition, especially at home when playing home, you probably think they've got a great chance of beating Arsenal. And like I said, it's not a real criticism of Arsenal. It's about themselves and the fact that the way they've approached the games in the past against them.
Right. That's why Silva's getting all the plaudits, isn't he? Because he's setting them up and saying, do you know what, you go out and sort of firing them up as individuals and saying, go out and get into Arsenal because there's a chance there to... making them believe that.
Absolutely. And even when things don't go for them, maintaining that belief, and then things did go for them with that Richarlison penalty, the merits or demerits of which I don't particularly want to get into. But did you know... David, that Petr Cech has never saved a penalty for Arsenal in any competition.
I did know
never.
That, yeah.
Is it remarkable or not?
It is for somebody of his stature, it is.
Mm. Let me just tell you that Watford have gone up to fourth and Arsenal haven't. And they're having the best ever start to a top-flight season. Ooh, they're going to be at Chelsea next. Can they, David? Watford, brilliant on the road under Marco Silva. Can they at Stamford Bridge next weekend?
Yes, they can.
Bingo. RM says, my question is, how would you fix Arsenal and make them competitive again? Who wants to answer this?
How much time have you got?
Not much. Really, not very much at all. How would I fix them?
I would try to get rid of the owner.
Okay.
This is hard, difficult.
Right.
Hire a sporting director.
Yes.
And then look for a new manager.
Okay. Let me ask you, Rafa, then, about another story. Mesut Ozil leaving in January. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not, no. But I think it's only logical for Arsenal to think that if both players absolutely refuse to sign a new deal and they're not really making a big difference, certainly not in Ozil's case at the moment, that we absolutely have to keep them, why not make a few million euros in January?
Absolutely. Can you pronounce his name again?
Mesut Ozil.
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 Okay. Yeah. A little bit more of an on that. Okay. Arsenal are going to be in Serbia on Thursday for that Europa League where they will be entertained by Red Star Belgrade.
The Maracana.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. Also in the Europa League, Everton are hosting Lyon. Everton very much bottom of their group, making the worst start to a Europa League campaign ever by a Premier League side. Atalanta, who got beaten this weekend by Sampdoria.
Western Blackburn.
Yeah.
Did you not say European campaign?
No, I think I said Europa, but they're quite close because, you know. Sorry. And then Milan are up against AEK. There's loads of games. Nice Lazio, that could be quite an interesting game. Lazio, by the way, just beat Juventus this weekend. First team to win at Juventus in over 2 years that wasn't Juventus. First visiting team. And they just look, they look so impressive. I didn't realise Lazio were that good. They look bigger than Juventus. They look stronger than Juventus. Having said that, they would have only drawn if Dybala had put that penalty away at the end. Juve are hosting Sporting. Other Champions League matches include Barcelona at home to Olympiacos. Ernesto Valverde against his former side, David. I'd forgotten he was there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid, who drew with Barcelona 1-1 this weekend, will be in Azerbaijan, land of fire, as their shirts proclaim. That'll be quite a... They'll be conflicted over that one, won't they? They're against the motherland as they take on Karabag. Super. Anything else from the midweek you want to mention, Raf?
No, okay. The Bundesliga is under pressure after they managed to lose every single game.
Yes.
Matchday 2.
Mm.
I think with Bayern playing Celtic and Dortmund playing Apoel, there is a chance to rectify this.
You'd hope.
Yeah.
By the way, I mentioned Lazio beating Juventus, which was on Saturday afternoon. A terrific performance from Lazio. Sunday evening, because there were three huge games in Serie A this weekend. Did you see the Milan derby at all?
I did see most of the second half.
Oh, wasn't it good?
I don't know. I actually, this might sound really contrarian and weird, but I was
from
a
you?
Bit disappointed. I thought they didn't water the pitch or something. The ball moved so slowly.
It's Italian football, Rafa.
No, it really isn't. I don't know, just the quality from Milan on the ball was... I expected more after all the money that they spent. They look very ordinary.
Have you seen the match this season? Have you seen Milan match this season?
No, I hadn't. No, this is the first team I've seen. First time I've seen them properly.
They're not a slick outfit.
No, I mean, Inter on the ball looked like they know what they were doing. There were some interesting runs. You could see that they play like a team. With Milan, it was all a bit, you know, one guy starts running and then another guy starts running and then we'll see, maybe we can just
play
some kind of ball into the box.
Montella's still putting the pieces together and I hope he gets given time.
I don't know, I was disappointed.
Really?
And I say this as somebody who's been... actually really enjoying Serie A recently and think that's been one of the most entertaining leagues.
Sorry.
But yesterday, yes, entertaining as a spectacle, but I think football was actually pretty poor.
Really? Okay, with 3-2 it finished. Milan twice came from behind to equalise, but then a late penalty again. Icardi, by the way, he got a hat-trick. His second goal, Stuart Smith said that finish from Icardi was something else. Can't wait to hear your take on this. You saw that, Rafa. It was in the second half, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a miss hit, wasn't it?
It was a...
No, he adjusted his body beautifully.
First time that
shades of Di Canio, but with the ball coming from the side rather than more from the
Were you impressed with
front.
Cutrone? He came on. Did you not think he... Real talent? No? People are raving about him. I like him. Milan, anyway.
Icardi looked sensational.
Icardi,
I mean, he looked like he was really somebody who should be mentioned a lot more and talked about as one of the most exciting number nines in European football.
Well, there you go. There you go. Inter, of course, not featuring in any European competition this midweek. Other teams that are include Besiktas, who'll be visiting Monaco, who are having a rotten time of it in the Champions League, and Paris Saint-Germain, who'll be travelling to pointless Anderlecht, who are now coached by Hein van Haesbroek. PSG are now 6 points clear, excitingly, in Ligue 1, Kelly.
Very exciting and completely unexpected.
Did you see that goal?
It shocked me.
Did you see the goal that Dijon scored in their 2-1 defeat by PSG this weekend?
Yes, I did see it.
David, you saw it, yeah?
Do you know what the best part about it wasn't even the volley. It was the knee slide to the camera. It was timed to perfection.
Very nice. Benjamin Jeannot.
Is that who it was?
Something like that. Stunning volley in the 87th minute to equalise. But Meunier came back and got his second. Anyway, tell you what, let's leave all that fancy down continental stuff to the side because there's some honest, raw Premier League action that we haven't touched on yet. For example, Brighton-Everton, which was witnessed by Ian McIntosh. Oh, hang on. Hello, Ian.
Morning.
Morning to you. Rooney rescues point.
Hmm.
at the Amex.
I think he's done Koeman quite the favour there because they were dreadful yesterday.
Really?
And I'm not sure if Koeman would have survived losing 1-0 to Burnley and then losing 1-0 to
Brighton. Are we at that point already?
I think we're very close.
So how much difference does that Rooney penalty make then?
Well, I think it buys them a little bit of time. I mean, they've got Arsenal next weekend. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But you just can't see any improvement there. They're so slow. And you've got to say, coming up against Brighton, who are, diplomatically speaking, one of the more conservative outfits in the league, did they really need two defensive central midfielders there? They've got Tom Davis sitting on the bench, who's one of the few people in the squad with the mobility to get up and down. It's not getting any better.
Everton fans are worried that they don't have a plan. They said that the players are on there, other than having two holding midfielders or two deep line midfielders, other than that, they haven't really got a plan. They don't know what the hell these players are playing to. Did you see it?
No, I think this season, well, actually, I did at the beginning. They were, because when Brighton go compact and deep, it's very, very difficult to get through them. And they're very, very good at that. So they were so wide, Everton. They had both fullbacks and both wingers right out with chalk on their boots. But it only seemed to last about 10 to 15 minutes and they didn't really get anywhere with it. I mean, it was Idrissa Gueye with the only two half chances they had in the first half. Rooney was barely in the game. When he was, he, you know, demonstrated that bit of invention and experience they wanted from him. But I think he touched the ball almost the fewest number of times of any Everton player. It's really not looking good there at all.
They gave the ball away a lot as well, didn't they? For somebody who's got for a team that's got a lot of players behind the ball as well, especially in gear.
Yeah, but I mean, both teams were guilty of that. It was not a good first half, or indeed a first 82 minutes. Very little going on.
If the situation is already precipitous as regards Ronald Koeman's involvement in their project going forward and other buzz phrases, who do you think they might have lined up to take over?
Well, there's been all sorts of names linked with him over the weekend, including Joe Royal, which would be a bit of a surprise. If Jupp Heynckes can do it at Bayern, he was the last man to win silverware there.
Yeah. I mean, there's talk. I mean, David Moyes is out of a job, isn't he, at the moment? Depending on whether or not he's offered that. David Unsworth is a name that keeps getting mentioned.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because he's doing really well with the under-23s. And if they've got all those young Everton players that they want to bring through, he's a player that they're sort of talking about. But
I mean, I also think
I don't know how seriously it's thought of at board level, but certainly there's a conversation that people
have. They do have an exceptional under-18s and under-23 side.
But I've been thinking this season is probably going to be the season for Sean Dyche to step up.
Ooh.
He would be perfect there.
What, you mean to abandon Burnley and just kind
not,
of...
Not abandon, but sometimes, you know, you can be somewhere for a really long time doing a really good job and you just want to take new opportunities elsewhere where there's freedom and potential.
I tell you what, I would regard that in the dimmest light possible.
Would you say that's treacherous?
I think so, wouldn't you? I mean, what about the people he's going to leave behind? All the work they put in together.
See, I was unaware of all of this. I didn't know anything when I came to this.
About Everton.
That's fascinating. That's not a topic you're going to be talking about, though, in your show coming up Tuesday, are you?
No.
But I bet, Ian, you are going to be talking about Wolves going top of the Championship.
Yeah, we've got a lot of that.
Probably were they at the weekend?
Brilliant. And they're really so hungry to
hungry
lead into
like.
Inevitable. Oh. But that's
hunting
the thing.
Hunting and packs. Yeah.
When you
did
get
they get their tails up?
How many more?
Any howlers?
Oh God! When you get a collection of players,
where were they?
Oh, sweet Jesus! Brought together so quickly to get that kind of that team dynamic going so quickly is very rare indeed.
But it's the improvement in the players who are already there as well, isn't it? That's they've improved the players around them.
Anyway, more of that kind of thing on Tuesday. When you'd also no doubt be talking about Derby beating Nottingham Forest. No,
a little.
Are you going to discuss the Amiobi brothers, Schürrle and Sammy, both scoring on the same day for the first time since August 2013?
Not really.
Okay. Who's your guest going to be? Yeah.
Well, we've got Gregor Robertson coming in. Does one of the best columns in the Monday broadsheets. He's a former Chesterfield player, and we're starting with Chesterfield because they're 92nd. But, you know, I watched them lose at home to Morecambe on the tape earlier today. I think there's green shoots there. I don't think it's not unrecoverable.
All right.
We'll also...
Because with Chesterfield, you kind of expect them to get a stuffing, don't you?
Like a sofa, is that the joke?
Exactly. Yeah. Sofa, so good. I should have worked that in. Kelly, brilliant. We'll go back and we'll do a retake afterwards, Ben. Yeah. Ian, anything else?
Yes, we sent Matt Stanger to Oldham. So right. We'll be talking about that, because if Paul Scholes gets that job, there's no justice in the world. Should be Richie Wellens.
But Richie Wellens, though, says that he's very happy to go and work under Paul Scholes. In fact, he would love to go and work under
Paul Scholes. Would you like Kelly to come and join you on your show?
Yeah, definitely.
Bingo. There you go, Kelly.
Present it. Be a marked improvement.
Listeners to footballing podcasts will know that there's enough tough decisions to make these days without having to worry about which razor to use. So why don't you take the hassle out of your shaving routine by signing up with our pals Cornerstone. Never run out of blades, never need to shop again. Just let them know how often you shave and they'll take care of the rest. Get £10 off your first order and find out more about your perfect shave box at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Rafa, what?
Yeah, Newcastle,
Southampton. Southampton, Newcastle.
Not Sunderland, Southampton.
Mikel Merino making his move from Dortmund permanent for only 6.5 million. That's a bargain.
9 million euros.
In other Newcastle, I didn't see this game because I went to see Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is so good. Really, so good. But I do know that prior to this match, they had a training ground spat at Newcastle, where they have a long and storied tradition of training ground spats. This one was between Jamal Lascelles and Mo Diame, and it resulted in Jonjo Shelvey wearing a cast to protect a broken finger. I'd love to know what happened there.
Well, I'd like to know as well, but everyone keeps saying that these things happen all the time in training and that they're nothing, but they do mean something.
What do they mean, David?
Well, it just means that there's some tension within the squad.
Isn't this kind of passion that you want in your...
Well, not really. I mean, like I said, people say it happens all the time, but it doesn't.
No.
You know? And if something does happen, then it's generally because something is wrong within the group.
What do you think is wrong within the group?
Well, they just don't get on together.
Oh.
I mean, normally in a dressing room, you've got 25 lads who are... who you're going to get on well with, better with some than you are with others.
Mm.
And sometimes it boils over.
Right. But How many times in your career did you see events of this nature? How often?
Quite often. If it did happen, it was around the time when teams were struggling.
Right.
So then it would sort of boil over into training. There would be frustrations.
Ironically, though, they're not struggling, Newcastle. They're up in ninth now with that point from the trip to St Mary's.
Well, that's why it's the only reason why it's surprising, because they do seem to have like a sort of good team togetherness.
Yeah.
But
there've been long-running tensions in the squad, haven't there? But I thought they got rid of all the kind of main culprits of it. But it just shows it's still simmering away.
Wasn't Shelvey sort of the peacemaker? Because he's normally right in the middle
of it. Quite fiery.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, usually he saves that for matches, though, doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, we managed to avoid any discussion of the game, but I'm quite happy to sit here speculating on who slapped who.
Well, Fraser Forster did come in for a little bit of criticism yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't...
What's happened to his form? Because...
Well, do you know what? He had the ACL injury that he come back from. And
right.
When he initially came back, he did look in really good shape, but he's bulked up.
Yeah.
Used that time well to bulk up. He probably was lacking sort of... in sort of power and strength, but it also at that time you're not goalkeeper training, you're not sort of having that flexibility and agility training in with it,
right.
So it can lately become like a little bit stiff, and he kind of looks like that now for goalkeepers as big as him. They rely on their reach, they have a really long reach, so they become a little bit lazy with their feet, and yesterday it just didn't look great. If I go into detail about what happened with the goal, there was a shot blocked at 6 yards out. He's dived to his right. And then instead of using the traditional sort of just getting up normally, he uses this spin technique where you sort of throw your legs out in front of you, spin yourself round on your backside, and then you get up the other side. Now, what that happens is, as you're moving back to your left, it means anything to your right you can't get at all. Because you're facing to your left, and it just looks so laboured when somebody of his size tries that technique. And it normally works better with keepers who are sort of smaller than him.
Right. Okay. Were you impressed by contrast with Joe Hart grabbing his first ever assist and the first assist by any Premier League goalkeeper since Boxing Day 2016?
Well, that's a surprise, because I would have had my money on Pickford or Edison.
Oh, really?
Just because of the way they set off counter-attacks.
When you think of that question over his distribution, have some of that Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it is just a punch straight up the field that landed somebody's feet, but... Yeah,
anyway, it earned the Hammers a point away at
Also should
Burnley.
Have given away a penalty.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He should have.
He should have given
again,
away a penalty.
When was the last game as well? When he did give a penalty when the referee didn't give it. Yeah.
All right, but... Hammers did go down to 10 men after Andy Carroll picked up 2 yellow cards in the space of 2 minutes.
No, second one is a sending off in itself.
You think
I think,
I would have thought so. Anyway, so he'll be suspended for what? Just one game, presumably, because of some of yellow cards. Oh, Richarlison apparently could be facing an extended ban if he's found to have been diving.
I don't think he will be because there was contact. Now, whether that warrants a foul and whether that entitles him to go down is debatable.
Hmm.
But as soon as you actually are being touched at full speed, you cannot then say to the player, you dived, because he didn't. I mean, he felt a touch and fell. And that's why that's an almost impossible thing to retrospectively look at unless there is a very clear evidence of somebody sort of completely falling into space with no one around him. This is not going to be the sort of incident that the FA can clamp down on.
Fair enough. One last game to mention, Swansea's victory over Huddersfield, who, since beating Newcastle back in August, have now played six, won none, and scored only one goal. Of course, part of the reason there is that Steve Mounier's been out injured, but worryingly for David Wagner's side, they have Liverpool and Man United as their next two. Ouch. Swansea, fact about them, 5 Premier League goals so far this season, which is not many. How many has Tammy Abraham scored of those?
5.
4. But close. Mm. Yeah, you're there.
It was something in the question that suggested.
Yeah, I misled you, sorry. Anyway, that is it for today's Totally Football Show. Thank you so much, David Priest, for being with us.
Absolute pleasure.
And to Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Kelly, so nice to have you with us.
So lovely to be here, as always. Okay, see you soon.
Have a great time up in Salford.
I will. Thank you.
Listeners, Rafa and I will be doing the Goal Show Tuesday and Wednesday on BT Sport Uno, so do join us for that. Otherwise, we'll be back on Thursday with more fun and games with your Totally Football friends. We'll see you then. Bye for now.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.